It's so nice to see you. I feel like it's been a long time. I'm covering for Jane because she had an absolutely insane day of moving dogs out of the house and work stuff, and she had someone coming to spray for mold, I think, in her other house and whatnot. So anyway, it was one of those things where I could step in and help out. Since we're in a good routine with baby and whatnot, I was gonna give baby a cameo, but I've sent her out with grandma so that you could have my undivided attention. So we'll see if they come back before we're done here, and I can give you a little peek at Chloe. But for now, let's dive in. So I'd love to know kind of what you guys are working on, if there's obviously, as usual, anything urgent that you wanted to chat about that isn't related to the monthly theme. Of course, we can always do that, and I'm here to do that. But the theme this month is money. And I know there's probably plenty to talk about there because it's such a triggering topic. And we all have different crap when it comes to money stuff. But the stuff that we put out there this month, the intention was a couple of things. One, if you had a look at the content, obviously you're under no obligation to do that on a monthly basis, but if you did, you'll see that there's kind of a mix of stuff there. There's some mindset stuff, because I think it's that money mindset stuff that is the worst and gets most in your way. And then there's some really practical stuff to help you get organized and to prioritize some tasks. So everyone's at a different place. Like for some of you, that might be super basic and you've done it all. And for some of you, it might be totally overwhelming and you're like, I can't do any of this. So my advice with that stuff is just to take it a step at a time. But I wanted to just check in with you and just have a little conversation about money, actually, because I think it's really interesting. And I always love hearing from other people, like what your journey is and where you're at now. And especially as it relates to your kind of ability to get out there in the world as a business and a brand. Because I think there's this real interesting connection between money and worth. And I find, I don't know if you do, but I find that there it's sometimes ends up being something that stops us from getting out there, from putting ideas out there, from charging, from doing products or services because you're not sure about the price point or whatever. So I'd love, do you guys have anything that you want to talk about or anything that has come up based on what I've said so far that you want to chat about when it comes to this like money worth stuff? I'm just going to plug in really quick. Everyone's being very shy today. Okay. I might hot seat you because I know you. I know you guys, and I can put you on the spot. I always struggle with product pricing. I'm now much more comfortable with my worth. Good. That's awesome. Hopefully we've had something to do with that, Carrie. I was listening to a podcast today, and you just can't really put enough stuff into your brain about charging and charging what you're worth and value and all that stuff. But the podcast today, there was a line that I found really, really interesting, which was basically, and I'm probably going to butcher it because I don't remember the exact words, but it was basically like, the podcast was about debunking the myth that the money that you make is based on the value that you put out into the world. And do you guys have that belief? The more value I put out, the more money I should get in return. And what was interesting about this conversation that the guy was having is that it was Jim Fortin's podcast, by the way, if you want to look it up. It was about being able to put value out into the world is only half of it, basically. So half of it is the value that you put out into the world, but the other half of it is valuing the value that you're putting out into the world. And that it really struck me because I feel like most of us, especially in the pet space, are give, 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 right? We give constantly, whether it's free content or free advice or free products or, helping out shelter animals or whatever it is, we give and give. And what's really interesting, I think, about this whole money mindset thing is that if you are not valuing that, if you're not either putting a value on it or, with the stuff that you sell, putting enough value on it, obviously other people aren't either. And I've been thinking about this lately because we're doing some new products and stuff over here. And a couple of them I wanted to give away for free. They're super, super valuable because I love the advice I heard this at a conference last year, and it was Jay Baer, who, if you're not familiar with him, check out his book, Talk Triggers. It's amazing. It goes really well with the branding stuff that I teach about surprise and delight and how to get your customers talking about you. Talk Triggers is the book by Jay Baer. But he was saying, now I've totally forgotten my line of thinking there. I'll come back to that. That it's this idea of putting value out into the world and really valuing it and being able to understand the value for yourself, because if you don't, then who else will, right? So I'll come back to the Jay Baer quote when it comes back to my head. I'm going to blame this on having very, very little sleep, being total baby brain. So my mind is not as quick as it was. Oh, cool. Carrie says, yes, your book started me on a massive journey to change. It's hard to price things. I did raise my rates this spring. Oh, I remember what it was. Jay Baer said, the best thing you can do for your business is compile everything you know and put it like in a book, let's say, for example, and give it away for free. Because, and he was talking about in the context of the fact that most people, you know, they're not in the market for information, right? Most people are overwhelmed by information. They want someone to help them. And so the example he gave was like a real estate agent who basically put together this entire like multiple 100-page PDF about how to sell your own house with all the forms that you needed, how to fill them out. He included the forms, told you where to file them, like all that stuff, compiled it all together and said, want to sell your own house? Here you go. This is literally everything you need. Here it is for free. But the reality is that most people don't want to do all of that work, right? Most people don't want the faff of filling out those forms and going to file them and making sure they did it right. And so I've been thinking about these new products and services and thinking about giving some of them away for free because they are massively valuable. But I love this idea of just giving away everything you know. And obviously, as you guys know, I'm invested in helping entrepreneurs. So it seemed like a really good idea. But the other thing I know to be true, and I was reading some recent data about this from other entrepreneurs and the tests that they've done, is that we don't value things that we don't pay for, right? So how many things have you gone around and trolled on the internet, and like how many PDFs have you put your email in and downloaded and then never looked at again? You're like, ooh, I'll save that for later. Ooh, that looks really good. Ooh, I need to grab that. But you don't actually use it. So this whole idea of needing to have skin in the game, needing to be invested in order to actually use something or create change, I think is really, really important. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out as a conversation piece, because as you know, and I preach, like you want to give away a ton of value for free, but you also have to value that value. And that's where, you know, it's okay to give stuff away for free. That's why we do podcasts and ebooks and that kinds of thing. The idea there is to attract people, but then on the flip side, being able to charge what you're really worth. And, you know, we're looking at this at a more sort of woo-woo energetic way, that you need to really be able to stand up and charge what you're worth in order to have other people respect that, but also to have that sort of, that kind of, you know, if you believe in the law of attraction or manifestation stuff, to kind of be at that higher vibration where you're attracting more value as well. Anyway, so I'll come back to your guys' comments over here. Cassie says, it's hard to price things. I did raise my rates this spring for training by 50%, and the types of clients I've attracted since then have been so much more rewarding to work with. Yeah, I had that same experience, Cassie, when I was a pet photographer and like massively jumped up my prices one spring. And from that point, every client I worked with was like my BFF, and they all invited me to like stay for a glass of wine, and I'd like hang out with them after the session, and they were super cool and they really valued me, and they... my average sale like went from like $800 or $900 to $3,500 when I did that, and everything was better. So I'm really glad you've had that experience. That is statistically what I expect to happen when you raise prices. Obviously, there's that scary initial dip where you often will lose clients, where your conversion rate of inquiries will go down, right? Because anytime you raise a price, your conversion rate goes down. People having to spend more money means you have to find more people in order to get the same number of clients, because that conversion rate goes down. And that's just science. That's just statistics. And I think the problem with that is it can really knock our confidence. So then we question everything, right? So there is that initial dip when you raise your prices typically. And as long as you can weather that and that your confidence can hold up through that, then typically the experience I've had, and I've heard other people have as well, is the experience you've had where it's everything's better. You're making more, working with fewer people, and those people that you are working with are better. They take less of your time. There's less conflict. They're more enjoyable. But that dip is scary, right? Most people don't do it because A, we don't feel like we're worth it, or we're scared that other people might think we're not. And B, we're scared of losing, right? We're scared of losing clients. We're scared of losing inquiries, which does happen. And so that whole process is really terrifying. But if you can get through that fear, then there are so many rewards on the other side. And I'm so glad that was your experience as well. Nicholas says, I'm guilty of that because something is easy for me and I know how to do it. I assume that it's easy for everyone and they also know how to do it. So I don't place the level of value on doing it that I probably should. So therefore I don't charge the level of value that it is to them. Yes. And I think a lot of us are guilty of that. Is anyone else guilty of like, well, it's easy for me, so I shouldn't charge for it? I think one really good fundamental argument for that is it doesn't matter whether it's easy or hard for you. Your time is your time is your time, right? How hard you're working during that time doesn't really matter because the time is spent. So what it really comes down to is valuing your time, which is why I'm such a big proponent of that whole minimum viable revenue per hour model of like, this is how much I want to make. This is how much time I want to work. This is how much I need to be making per hour. Doesn't matter if that hour is easy or hard or working with 50 people or one person. Like the whole point is, you know, you've got to value that hour. And that whole minimum viable revenue per hour model really helps you put a value on that hour. And then you can change it from that emotional conversation about, well, it's so easy for me to, this is what I want to make in my business. This is what this hour is worth. I don't care what I'm doing during this hour. This is the value. This is the cost of that hour. I'm trying to keep it a little bit more sort of objective and practical. I didn't get a client for a whole month afterward and freaked out, but then I was busier than ever a couple of weeks later and no one batted an eye about the price. Yes, girl. Oh, I love that. I feel like I want to get some testimonial from you about this whole process, because it is so terrifying, right? That inevitability. And that's why, you know, I always feel like I have to say when people are changing their prices, like this will work, this will work, this will work, but you're going to go through the desert. Like it's going to scare the shit out of you because you're going to feel like you're never going to get another client again. And that's just not true. It's just so scary. So well done for you for battling through that. And exactly what you said, no one batted an eye about price because they didn't know what the prices were before. And this is why we build brands, right? We build brands, and I'm going to be doing a webinar next week on the 2nd all about this, because we can charge more. We have better service. We have more guarantees. We care more. We're doing more good things in the world. And therefore, we can charge more for what we do because we have more demand. We can afford to say no. And when you can afford to say no, then you can charge whatever you want because you don't need, right? You're not desperate and you're turning people away and you can be in a waitlist situation and that kind of thing. So that is awesome. I'm really, really, really proud of you, Cassie. Well done. I hope there was some sort of reward that went through that first client that booked after that new pricing, because I'm sure that must have felt like water after you were so thirsty. Can I ask how many products were people buying to get you to that kind of sale? Were you doing IPS? Oh, Carrie, I had a la carte and collections. I had a collect. My middle collection was around $3,500. And yes, I was definitely doing in-person sales. My session fee at that point, I think, was around $350. So it was pretty high anyway. And most people were getting a collection that included an album. So I really championed my albums. I really, obviously, I'm a graphic designer, so the albums were pretty cool. I made them super personal and they were a lot of work. They were a ton of work, but I think the a la carte price for the album was like $1,500. And so the collection was kind of built around that and probably included high-res images. I don't really remember, but it was remarkable. It was really remarkable how it jumped. And I jumped it in the middle of a client and I changed the prices after shooting this client before he had seen them, and then was fucking terrified to bring them to his house for his in-person sales session. And then actually I sent him the pricing before it. And then he did that like classic thing of like, I sent him the pricing and then was trying to nail down our in-person sales session date. And he did that classic thing where people are too busy. And he was like, I'm just going to take some 4x6s for now and deal with this later. Because he was a really well-off single guy. He worked at Microsoft and was very wealthy and very busy. And instead of just being like, okay, here you go. I said, you know what? Pick one of these dates. I'm going to come to your house. We're going to do this. I'll make it super, super easy for you. I know you said you wanted artwork on your walls for this party, which he had told me. That party is coming up in like a week. I can get it done for you and I will come hang it all for you. But you need to meet with me in the next 3 days, basically. And I brought him a bottle of wine when I came and I sat there until we did the order. And that was like, to date, that was like my biggest order ever. I think he ended up paying like $5,600 for all the artwork that he wanted because he wanted a bunch of wall art for his house. He like decorated his whole house with these canvases of his dogs. He was like the coolest, most eligible bachelor ever. He was so cool. And so, yeah, that was my first sale after this new pricing, literally after I'd had it for a week. And that, thank God, because that really reaffirmed for me. The first thing scared me because I was like, oh, he's seen the new pricing. He doesn't want to pay it. So he just wants the cheapest thing on the price list. And I totally shit myself and then realized that actually it wasn't about money. It was about time. He was just super busy and he didn't want to go through the list and he didn't want to make decisions. So I just took all of that off his plate and I was like, I'll come do it. I'll tell you what you need. I'll measure everything and I'll make sure you have it by your party. And that was what he needed. And then he just spent all the money and it was great. So, you know, some of the, you know, we're looking for validation that, you know, people don't think that we're worth it. And sometimes we get that validation, but it's not what we think. So that's really important to keep in mind with all this pricing stuff. And the amount of time it took for you to get to the point in life where that thing was easy for you to do. Yeah, totally. You know, I think I see slight rant coming. I see so many conversations happening in especially like niche specific Facebook groups where people are going on and on and on about all this justification for why you are worth what you charge. And one of those things is the amount of time it took for you to get to where this thing is easy for you to do. And I'm kind of anti-justifying why you charge what you charge, because I feel like you shouldn't have to justify it. It's your fucking business. It's your time. You charge what you want for it. People can take it or leave it, right? Like they don't have to hire you. There's other dog trainers out there. There's other pet photographers out there. There's other collars and leashes that they could buy. You don't need to justify it. What you need to do is be confident about it. But the hairs on my neck go up a little bit when I see like photographers in particular talking about, well, we have to pay insurance and we have to buy equipment and da da da. All those things are true. And those things should go into you deciding how much you charge and what your business costs are and what you know, based on how much you can work and what you need to break even and all that stuff. But when it comes to the justification to your customers, you know, people don't think about that kind of thing and they shouldn't. Like, do you, you know, when you hire a plumber, do you think about what it cost him to get certified and go to plumbing school to be able to fix your boiler? Like, no, you don't care. You just want a problem solved and you'll pay what you need to pay depending on what your need is. If you need them to come out at midnight, then you'll pay a lot more, right? If you want to work with someone certified in a certain type of boiler, you'll pay what it takes to get that person out. So I think there's a really interesting mindset thing about not feeling like you need to justify what you charge. And again, this is another reason that we build brands, because the whole point of building a brand is to tick all of those psychological buttons for your clients so you don't have to explain it. You don't have to justify it. You exist as this brand out there in the world doing all this cool stuff and meeting the needs of your customers, showing them why you matter, showing them how you can give them a transformation. And then they're just saying, yes, you know, don't care what it costs, sign me up. That's the goal. Obviously, it takes a little while to get there, and I'm making it sound super easy. But the goal is that there is no justification at all. It's just that people have to have you. And actually, I'm just going to pop in the podcast that I did this week is all about building desire. And that's a huge part of it's a huge part of what makes a brand a brand and what makes a brand effective is building desire. And when you are able to build desire effectively, right? The quote in the book is about being the fox pee. When you can be the fox pee for your clients and they just cannot resist you, there isn't usually even a conversation about money. And the pricing that I was talking about earlier, the clients I was talking about earlier when I was pet photographer, so many of those clients, I knew they were the right ones because when they inquired, they didn't even ask me how much I charged. Price was just not even a part of the conversation. They saw the portfolio or they'd seen work I'd done and they knew they wanted me. And, you know, some of them were still in a little bit of sticker shock. You know, some of them didn't know that pet photography could cost that much or should, but they were in, you know, they were invested at that point and they wanted what they wanted and that's what it cost. And that's the position that you want to be in. And that's why building a brand is so important, because if you haven't built up all that psychological support for why what you do matters, for why you're the best, for, you know, convincing them that you can help them with whatever problem or desire that they have in the best possible way, then there's going to be a lot more questions. But if you've already built that desire, there isn't even a question. It's just, I want it. I'm going to have it, period. That's the goal. I've just introduced albums and I'm not charging enough. This is interesting. You send your prices beforehand. Yeah, so most people don't, in my opinion, don't charge enough for albums because I feel like albums take a ton of time. Now, I know there's pet photographers out there, and I think Nicole Bagley is one of them, who have created this really great automated system for creating and designing albums for their clients. I didn't, because I'm a fiddly perfectionist graphic designer, so I spent a ton of time on albums. So they were my most expensive product because they cost me a lot, right? They cost $200 or $300. And I usually my costs anyway, but they took me hours and hours to do because I really, really cared about the outcome of that product in particular. So I felt like albums needed to be really expensive. Now, I have to say, as someone who has hired photographers, like I just hired a maternity and a newborn photographer, and her album, I think, is like $495. And I really appreciate that because that is super cheap. And I'm like, I might just buy it from her instead of doing it myself with the high-res, because that's really affordable. So, you know, all of these conversations about cost and profit and price point, they have this sliding scale, right? Like, it's so much easier for people to say yes to lower prices. So low pricing has a place all the time. I don't want you to think that I am a proponent of premium everything, because sometimes having products that are just really easy for people to say yes to is so valuable and exactly what you need to create stability in your business. So that's one of the caveats I always say, especially with premium products and services, is that you still want to have stuff in your business that is an easy yes, right? You need to have that stuff that makes it really easy for people to say yes to you. Unless you are really like a master marketer and you're really good at selling and you love that, or you've built up demand. I was at a point in my career then when I had built up enough demand that I could say no to people. So if I worked with less people, but they all paid me more, that was fine. 2 years before that, I was not in that position. I had to do whatever I could, you know, to bring money in the door. And like when I was doing mini sessions, even at that point in my career where I was charging and making that much, when I was doing mini sessions, I was still charging like $49.99, $200 for the work I would do with like at pet boutiques and stuff, because I saw that as like getting people in the door or just making a bunch of money on a day that I thought had lower value than the work I was doing the rest of the time. But I did that because it's much easier for someone to say yes to $49 than it is for them to say yes to $200. So for me, that was important to have, even though my regular session was $350. So it was a huge variance in pricing. So just keep that in mind as you go through this. And I did send prices beforehand because I didn't like to blindside people. So he would have already signed up for the session and done the session. I can't remember when, if I sent it before they signed up for the session or not. I don't think so. It was after they signed up for the session, but before we met in person, I would send my pricing PDF. To be honest, most people didn't even look at it. So yeah, it was still a surprise to them when I showed up in person to do the sales session. They still hadn't looked at it. But you know, I really appreciate it when people have it on their website. The photographer that I worked with for maternity and newborn has it all right on her site. And that's great because I don't get any surprises. I know exactly what I'm budgeting. I know exactly how much it's going to cost me, and I can move through the sales experience without fear. So that's, you know, I know it's, everyone's got different philosophies on that, but I definitely like to at least give people an idea on the website of what they're going to spend, because otherwise it can really limit them from getting in touch. And they might go to a photographer who's got that information on their site, because nobody likes to be blindsided by pricing. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well. I may do an example collection on the website. Yeah. Yeah. So you could do something really fun, like all the products in this image for, you know, $12.99 or whatever, or, you know, the classic line that everybody likes to say is, collections starting from $9.99, most of our clients spend between 500 and 2000 pounds, so that people just have a bracket in their head of what to expect. And then they can get into the specifics about what that actually is later, at a later time. So, any other pricing stuff? I know, so Shannon, you have physical products that you sell, and that's really different than services, right? Is there anything that you find difficult pricing-wise? Hold on, I'm just going to shut my door because I've got a screaming baby. Or anything that you want to chat about that's different than some of the service stuff that we're talking about? Husband was trying to talk. What was the question? Oh, the question was, I was asking Shannon in particular about if she had any questions about physical products and pricing, but I'm also curious what with all this pricing stuff and all this money stuff, you know, all of this comes back to some of our like money story stuff. And I'm curious, you know, the one that seems to trigger a lot of us, that most of us seem to have in common, is this idea that work needs to be hard, that money needs to be hard to acquire. And this is one that I've struggled with for a really, really long time. And most of us have it because our parents gave it to us because their parents gave it to them. And you can probably think like things like the Great Depression and those sorts of, you know, war era experiences that kind of passed this belief down that things need to be expensive. That work needs to be hard and money needs to be hard to earn. And I feel like that leads us to a position where we sort of punish ourselves, where we self-sabotage ourselves. And when something is selling and working, we almost like want to stop doing it because it feels too easy. Or like experience I know some people have had is that when they build a brand that is like perfect and wonderful and great, it's hard for them to step into it, or a passive income product, for example, it's hard to step into it and sell it because it's too perfect. It's too easy. It feels too easy. And then that doesn't resonate with what we believe about earning money. And then we just like procrastinate doing or selling the thing because it's too easy. And then that doesn't fit our belief system about work having to be hard. Have any of you guys had that experience? Because I think that can be a really, really tricky one. That is really critical to like work on, to nip in the bud, because that will totally, totally get in your way. The other thing that I find, especially because I know a lot of you guys have service-based businesses, is, you know, we base our pricing on kind of what other people are doing and selling, which is important because you have to think about yourself within a market, right? You can only charge what the market will bear. But keep in mind, and I know I've probably said this before and it's not new to you, but, and I'm sure it's obvious to you, is that a lot of the pricing that's out there, people have set based on the pricing that was out there when they came into business, right? So everyone's kind of like basing their price on each other. So, you know, if you want to be that rogue person who just kind of goes, who just sort of like sets a price and goes crazy and does it, like, you should, because again, in the idea of justifying your pricing, it's about the value that you deliver and about valuing that value rather than what the market will bear. If nobody buys it, then, you know, ever, then, you know, it's probably too expensive. The market won't bear it. People won't pay it. But, you know, when we talk about premium pricing as well, even that too expensive stuff has a place because it anchors the other prices that you have, your other products, as more affordable. So there is a place on your price list or in your services for things that seem too expensive because they make the other normal stuff seem more affordable. So even if you never ever sell it, there's still a place for it. The other place for it that I've seen is sometimes having a really over-the-top expensive thing can be a really good way to get press. So the company that I, when I first went into business, I had a photo and design studio and a retail shop. And the retail was a trademark licensing, which is kind of like a franchise from a particular brand. The idea being that we give them money and they fill our store with all of their own label, their own branded products, which didn't go quite that way. If you've heard me tell the story before, we ended in this crazy long lawsuit because they didn't end up giving us the products. But one of the things they did really well was get really good national press. And I mean like on television and like People magazine and like really solid, like mainstream, non-pet related national press. They had their products in movies. One of their products was in Mean Girls. So they did a really good job at that. But one of the things that they did is they had a few products that were just over the top crazy. So like one of the things that they talked about was having a $35,000 pair of diamond earrings for dogs. Now they were magnetic. They were not, they didn't pierce the dog's ears. But they got so much press by having this product that, to be honest, they probably never actually had. I never saw these earrings. You know, I don't know if they actually existed, but they did a really good job of getting out there and showing how over the top their brand was by kind of talking about products like that. Did they ever expect anyone to buy this product? Doubtful. I really doubt it. But it was so good at getting the attention of the media, who are like, wow, this is crazy. This is insane. So if they were trying to attract a client who wanted, you know, over the top expensive stuff for their dog, and they are out there, this was a great way to do it, because they were basically flying the flag of like, we're ridiculous over the top. Press picked it up and filtered it out there to the potential public who would buy something like this. So that's something to keep in mind. Bye, Carrie. Thank you for joining us. Cassie says, I often don't feel like I do anything any day, and it gives me extreme anxiety. Like somehow I've managed to pay my bills all this time while doing God knows what all day, and it's all some farce that will fall apart. I know it's silly and I actually do work a lot. It's just not hard. And as I get more support from staff and my older tasks aren't dependent on me anymore, that feels weird too. Oh, yeah. Can totally relate to that. It's I think trying to get that separation between these hours and money and hard work and money and time spent and money is really, really important. Because obviously, Cassie, you are in a management role where you have to manage people and clients and tech and, you know, liability and all the things to make your business run. And even if you're not out there like walking dogs, you have a tremendous amount to do. And I guess it'd be really interesting to think about in this case, when you have that anxiety come up, is to really think about the story, right? What story are you telling yourself? And is that, and the story at the moment is probably about like, I should be doing something right now because I'm not earning money. Or if I'm not doing something right now, there's something I'm forgetting. So that's like this real fear-based story, right? And I've got a bit of that too. I can totally relate to that. Of I need to be doing more, or I need to be working harder, or whatever the feeling is for you, because if I don't, this is all going to implode. This is all going to go away because I'm not earning it, or I'm missing or forgetting something. So I think really identifying that and like deciding what you want your new story to be, so that when you have that anxiety right up, you can just replace that story immediately with something like, you know, I'm the CEO of my business and I need to spend my time doing A, B, and C. And I also need to spend my time giving myself mental space, because that's where my creativity and strategy comes from. You know, or whatever it is that is important to you about A, the lifestyle that you're creating, and B, what makes you the most productive in your business, where you're adding the most value. I know you're building another brand now. So, that's a lot to be doing all at once. And, you know, if you don't give yourself that space, you never have the time or the ideas that come up to make that big game-changing stuff happen. You know, not just the ideas, but actually the implementation as well. And I think it's really, we want to outsource a lot of things in our business, but sometimes we end up wanting to outsource the wrong stuff, the places where we really add value, because we're so overwhelmed with the other stuff. So really kind of identifying those places where you in particular add value to your business, making sure you have time to do that. And then like having a story that lets you off the hook, so you don't have to be busy all the time in order to be earning your keep. So it would be really interesting. I'd love to know as you kind of keep going through this, I know you're you're going through a lot of transformation at the moment, what ends up working for you to kind of kick that anxiety? You're saying that Dee has helped a lot with her organization stuff, to have your to-do list. Yeah, that to-do list stuff so helps to make, to get rid of that fear that you're missing something, right? If you have a place where you can go put it right away so it doesn't get lost, that's really helpful to take away that fear. And that fear takes up so much energy. Like, that's why Todoist and to-do lists and Dee and stuff have helped me so much as well, because there's so much energy being taken up by the fear that I'm forgetting something, or the anxiety that I'm procrastinating, and thinking of it like that instead of thinking of it as strategic time management. Shannon, my pricing is very personal and tied to my worth. Yeah, so it's really interesting, Shannon, because you have a physical product, right? So even though it's not a service, and I think we've lost you for now, but obviously I'm recording this, so you'll be able to watch the recording back. Even though Shannon sells a physical product, it's still so tied to worth. And I think that's so hard as well, because with a physical product, you often have so many more costs associated with it. So there's this, like, either this logical thing of like, oh, well, I paid X for the materials that went into this product. And I know, like, you know, pet photographers and stuff, you have this as well, with the products that you sell. This is what the cost product costs me, so I'm going to just X times that, and that's what I'm going to charge the client. And oftentimes we think, well, I'll just times it by two and I'll charge the client that. But actually, if you just times it by two, you're never ever going to make enough margin to cover all the other costs in your business. You're never going to actually build a business that way. But when you feel guilt, or when you feel like you're ripping a client off, or when, you know, it's tough with both something like collars and leashes and with, you know, photography products, there's other products out in the world that your customer can be making comparisons with. So if they see, you know, a collar for $14 and you're charging $40, you know, there is the argument that your collar is too expensive. Or, you know, if you're selling, you know, the classic photography one is, if you're selling a print for $50 that they can go to Costco and get for $1, then there is the argument of like, why is yours so much more expensive? And that's where, what I was saying earlier, we get into that position where we feel like we need to justify it. And the reality is, you don't need to justify it. Those are your prices. You don't need to get into an argument with someone about your insurance and your education and your experience and all that kind of stuff. It really trying to step into a place where you put yourself into a customer can take it or leave it kind of mentality. Because if they don't value it, then they shouldn't buy it. Period. Like, don't need to argue about it. It's not an emotional decision. It's not connected to you as a human being. They simply don't value the collar. They simply don't value the print enough to pay that much for it. That's fine. That has nothing to do with you. That has everything to do with them. And I know that's easy to say, and that's much harder to actually do in real life. Yeah, like Laura says, they're not your customer, and that's fine. They don't get it. They've missed it. There's, you know, the desire isn't there. It's not built up, and they don't have to have it, and that's fine. And I think this self-worth stuff is so hard. We recently did a poll on the other Facebook group and asked, what is like your number one define, you know, how do you define success? And the number one thing that came back was money in the bank. And that's so hard, isn't it? I definitely have that too. And almost every entrepreneur I know who does, until you get really, really like evolved as a human being and like self-actualized. Because, you know, most of us want recognition, right? We want people to tell us they like what we do. And the highest form of flattery is not imitation. It is money. Give me money. If you think it's so great, pay for it and show me the money, right? Show me by paying me. We have all this fear around people not wanting to pay what we charge. And so that gets validated when people tell us that we are too expensive, or that what we charge is silly. And there is the antidote to all of this is confidence, right? The antidote to all of this is to making decisions that you're comfortable with, and then moving forward confidently without letting other people's value system impact how you feel about yourself. And that same podcast I mentioned earlier, he was saying, Jim Fortin was saying something about how we shouldn't let other people steal our inner peace. And I've heard this described before, if you've read the book, The Four Agreements, which is a really great book. you know, one of the four agreements in this book is to take nothing personally ever, because even to the point where someone is holding a gun to your head, it's not about you, it's about them. And everyone that we interact with is kind of just putting us and what we do through their own personal filter. And we personalize and internalize so much of it, which is so unnecessary. And most people are just living out their own story, right? So someone, and you've heard a million times, I'm sure, that like people pay for what they value, right? So some people pay for trips and some people pay for nice cars and some people pay for expensive handbags and, you know, won't pay their taxes or won't pay for trips, or, you know, people spend their money on what they value, not necessarily what they can afford. So the fact that they don't value it is not a commentary on the fact that it has no value. And that's where I think we get really confused, is if this particular person validates our worst fears and tells us that what we do is too expensive or not worth it, then we're like, oh crap, I knew that. And now it's true because this person said it's true. Like, we're kind of in that mode all the time. And I think like what Laura said is more true, which is like, oh cool, you're not for me. Like, we're not dance partners, you know, like we're not a good fit. Instead of letting it validate all your worst fears, it's just like, oh cool, no problem. Like, you know, can I recommend X, Y, or Z to you? Cause that might be a better fit for your budget. And having that attitude is so much better for everybody. But what that comes down to is really being able to work on your confidence. And, you know, I'm not going to go into this now because it's totally off topic, only totally on topic actually. And I've talked about it a lot, is this all comes down to self-love stuff, right? So much of the money conversation comes down to a self-love conversation. When you are an entrepreneur, you are the one setting your pricing and you are the one doing your sales. It is so much about building up your own confidence, building up your own self-love. So that you can go into those conversations feeling powerful and feeling objective, right? This is a really another great opportunity to have that whole your business is not your baby conversation, right? It's an experiment. You're going to hold it lightly. You can quit or stop or change it anytime you want. It does not exist. You do not exist. It exists to support you, not the other way around. And if it's not supporting you, what's the point? And that's where we get into this money conversation. In the content this month, Jane has a great article about planable income. She talks about, you know, the one-time sale, the passive income, and the planable income. And what she calls planable income, I call like subscription, basically. She's talking about money that you can count on for months and months into the future, or making one sale that then has recurring. So I often call it recurring income. So this can be something like a subscription service or product. It can be like a membership site. It can be like a payment plan. So, you know, I talk to a lot of service businesses who are hesitant to offer their customers payment plans, but I love them because it's planable income, right? If someone makes a purchase for $4,000 and pays that off over the next 4 to 5 months, that is consistent, planable income that you know is coming in. And it's easier for them to say yes because it's a lower upfront cost right now. So the payment plan can be really good as well, as long as, you know, you trust your customers to actually pay you. And there are also services that will manage that payment thing for you. So they actually take on the risk. And it's sort of like a credit sort of situation. But also, you know, getting people to sign up for, you know, a yearly commitment of some kind, or some sort of subscription is a way to get planable income. And that is kind of what she talks about in the article, is kind of shifting this holy grail from passive income to planable income first. So if you're in a position right now where you have a product or service, and you have to go out and every time you get a sale, you get a sale once and you're going to have to sell again. Then, you know, the next step for you probably is going to be planable income rather than passive income. Because what happens is dog trainers or groomers or dog walkers, people who have, you know, intense one-on-one services, or, you know, e-commerce stores, physical products, and every time you make a sale, you have to work hard again for the next sale. oftentimes when I talk to them, and Jane talks about this in the article, the holy grail is passive income, right? You're tired of having to work so hard for that sale and you want to just have money coming in. And what she points out, which is important, is that passive income isn't passive, right? You still have to do all the now, instead of doing that sale once, you have to put all this energy into creating a marketing funnel and a sales funnel. So your skill set changes from being a dog trainer who sells dog training to a marketer who knows how to do online sales. So that's really important to acknowledge. But it isn't passive. And it does take, you know, it's passive because you create the thing once and you can sell it and sell it and sell it and sell it, unlike, you know, doing in-person dog training. But it does take a significant amount of upfront initial investment of time and resources, et cetera. So what she's suggesting in this article is that the next step from doing this intense, you know, one-on-one service-based business is the next step from that is plannable income, which is, you know, taking your physical products and putting them into a box or into an automatic recurring subscription, or taking your services and putting them into a payment plan or into something that people sign up for over a number of months or years or whatever, so that you can plan. And what that is all about is getting you stable, right? Getting that stability. I talk all the time about the fact that your goal when you're growing your business, your first goal is to get stable. You shouldn't messing around with building a brand or doing any of this other crazy high level stuff, getting fancy, until you are stable and you are mentally stable. You know, you're getting out of that deep, deep, deep not enoughness, and you're financially stable and you can at least, you know, consistently pay the bills. Once you can do that stuff, you're in a much better position to get fancy, to build passive income, to build a membership site, to, you know, build an online presence and that kind of thing. But until then, you want to really get stable. And I think no matter what, you know, position you guys are in personally, I hope that with this month of content, you can use it as an opportunity to really look at your financial picture and say, where am I and where do I want to go? And then make some really strategic decisions about the products and services that you're selling now, and being able to be very strategic about what you sell and how you price it, how you sell it, and how, you know, whether it's passive or recurring or whatever, to give you that peace of mind and that stability so that you can continue to do the bigger, more important stuff in your business. And the other thing I want to say about that, and this is something that recently occurred to me personally, like behind the curtain a little bit here, is that one of the things that we have a tendency to do as entrepreneurs is to stop doing what's working for us. So my personal example is all of the products that I've created that have worked really well for me, I've pretty much stopped selling. So for those of you who are familiar with what I do, I've over the years, I've always had either a book club or a bootcamp course that is a live course, which includes one-on-one. And, you know, the price point is not low. It's like $1,500, and I would take 12 to 15 people in at a time, and I would sell it every quarter. And that product worked great for me for a couple of reasons. One is it was a really good boost of cash. I always sold it out. There was always demand because people missed out on the last launch and they wanted to get in because I had been doing it for 2 years. And what was even better is that it got results for people. People loved it, right? It was a program that really, really, really worked well for people. And I put it on the shelf to go build and do other stuff. Not because it wasn't working, not because people weren't getting great results, not because it wasn't making me money, but because I had other things to build and I couldn't do it all at the same time. And I recently had this realization as I was looking and having conversations with other entrepreneurs who were doing something similar. And I looked at them and said, oh, why have you stopped doing that? Because that's making you so much money. And they're like, oh, this, that, and the other. And I realized for myself, I had done the same thing, that we have a tendency to kind of diminish the value of things that are working for us because we're either bored or we don't realize it's the thing that's bringing the money into our business, or we get distracted with, you know, shiny object syndrome. So I just wanted to take an opportunity to say, since I've personally had this realization, is there anything in your business that you've stopped doing? And it's not just products that you sell as well. It could be, you know, checking in with Working with Dog and attending these calls. And when you do it, you stay more motivated and you get more productive and you get more done and you make more money. Like, that's a possibility. Or maybe it's doing, you know, free consultations for people and you stop doing that and now all of a sudden your clients have dropped off. You know, it will really vary depending on, you know, it could be having your ad in a particular magazine or online directory, something that you weren't really sure was working or you knew was working, but you were just bored of or just decided you didn't want to do anymore. And it has had an impact on your sales or your bottom line. So just a little sort of cautionary tale to say, don't underestimate stuff that's boring or old, because it might actually be really working for you. And it might be important to keep that stuff because I think we kind of think like, oh, I've done that and it works, so I can just move on. And sometimes you can't move on because it's that sustained, consistent effort that actually is what gets things done. It's what actually builds the foundation of that stability. So it might be more about finding ways to keep doing that thing and building, you know, other stuff on top of that. So it'd be really interesting if you end up finding stuff that you were doing that was working really well for you and you've stopped doing. I'd love to know about it in the Facebook group because I think that's a really funny phenomenon that seems to happen to everybody over the years. Okay, so we're almost near the end of our time, but I just want to check in with you. I feel like you guys have been a bit shy today. I don't know if it's the topic or not, and I've done a lot of talking. So I just want to check in and make sure if there's anything that you wanted to ask, or, you know, it doesn't have to be about money stuff. If there's anything that you want to share about what's going on for you this month or this year, or any questions you have about what's coming up. I'm, you know, that is why I'm here. I don't want to just talk at you this whole time, but if you don't talk back, you leave me no choice. I hope that you find the stuff this month useful. For those of you who are also in the mastermind, we are also talking money this month. And there was a really great call with Jenna yesterday. That's definitely worth checking out. The one thing I will say kind of in parting, based on my own personal philosophies about growing a business and how this all works, is, you know, I talk about the five laws of entrepreneurship, which are mindset, money, marketing, mechanics, and momentum. And money is number two, which is very important, and mindset is number one. And so much of number two, money, is also mindset. So if you don't, at the moment, have any support for your money mindset, and by support, I mean a book, a course, a mentor, an accountant, a spiritual practice, I would really, really, really recommend that you find something that can support that part of your life and business. It could be a person, it could be a book, it could be a blog or podcast, but something that you can tap into either on a regular basis to keep that part of your mindset healthy, or in an emergency situation in order to help get you out of a dark place or to keep you moving. And I want to say as well, it's not just when things are tough. Oftentimes what happens is we take our foot off the gas when things are good. We stop doing that marketing, or we stop doing that money work, or we stop doing that selling because things are working. And then lo and behold, 2 or 3 months later, nothing's happening because we stopped doing all that good work on either our mindset or our, you know, the practical marketing and selling in our business, because we feel like we don't need to because we're high or we're busy, which is where all that like mechanics and momentum stuff comes in, so that you can create a workflow where you have time and energy and it's not insane to both do the work and do the marketing and selling stuff at the same time. And that's a lot about, you know, outsourcing and systems and processes and stuff as well. So I just wanted to say that. Because I'm always happy to offer advice, resources, referrals for those people, books, programs, whatever, because I think that is, you know, it is, if not the number one thing that is going to move you forward, it's definitely in the top three, this money mindset work and working on those stories, like we talked about with work being hard, and working on your own, health when it comes to this money mindset, because the stuff that you have, you'll kind of always have, you need to keep working on it. So what you'll find is when you get to the next threshold, you know, you might not be starving or hungry or worried about paying the bills, but when you get to the next threshold of like trying to add that passive income or trying to get to six figures or your first million or whatever your big milestones are, all this stuff comes up again, even if you thought you got rid of it. So it's really important to have some resources to support you there. At a minimum, I would say, you know, some financial support. I talk about having above and below support. So having an above support, whether that is an accountant, but someone that you can turn to when it's either too hard or you're not motivated, who can either do it for you or really help you get through it in a really compassionate, empathetic, lovely way instead of making you feel like shit, can really, really help move the needle on that stuff. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to add? Any questions? Anything that you wanted to say about any of this? I feel like it's been such a long time since we've chatted and I've seen your faces and we've had conversations. So it's really nice that you're here. Thank you for coming. I hope that this conversation and that this month's content is useful to you, and you get out of it whatever you need. I feel obligated to say, you know, this program and these resources are not about consumption. They are about whatever you need right now, getting what you need out of it right now, or having somewhere to go to look up something that you need right now. So just because we're talking about money this month doesn't mean that's what you need to talk about. Maybe you need to talk about Facebook ads. And if you do a search, you'll find some really wonderful support for Facebook ads in working with dogs. So do remember that, that it can be the first place that you go to in order to actually look up the resources that you need, because you know you're going to find a video, you're going to find a workbook that's going to help you actually work through the particular question that you're having in a really, you know, petpreneur specific way, which is, you know, nearly impossible to find out there. So just keep that in mind, that we are your go-to place when you need it. And if you're curious, there is a little search. In our last release, we added a little search icon in the very top right of workingwithdog.com. So on any page, you should be able to just click the search button. So you can literally go in and search Facebook ads, click that, and it'll give you all the resources that we've put out on Facebook ads. So that is the easiest, fastest way to find anything on the site, free content, paid content, et cetera. Did I miss the Chloe cameo? No. My mum-in-law took her for a walk cause she was screaming. So she's not here for me to show you. I thought I might just be feeding her during this call because it keeps her really quiet and I can't really control what time she needs to be fed. Cause we're not in any kind of routine yet. But she was screaming. So grandma took her for a walk. Yeah, food makes me quiet too. She's not here, but I will do a cameo on Facebook or something really soon to introduce you guys. She's pretty cool. She's a pretty cool chick. But I also respect the fact that a lot of dog people are not kid people, so I promise I will not bombard you with my baby. She's cool to me, but she's not cool to everyone, and I don't like other people's kids, so I don't expect you to adore her. Don't worry. But she is pretty cool. So, okay, you guys, thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Good luck. I really hope that this is really, you know, you're moving into a period right now of tons and tons of prosperity and profitability. This is a really good time of year. Please use that Facebook group if you want or need to, or, you know, whatever, you know, Facebook groups you have access to, me, access to Jane. Let us help you. You know, that's what we're here for. So great to see you. Great to chat. I'm going to sign off now. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July for those of you who are in the States. And if you have anything planned, we'd always love to see it. The other thing I wanted to say is we are doing I'm going to be doing a campaign for Pet Professionals Week, which is the 5th through the 11th, of showing off some of our members. So I might tap on you. All of you are people I would be interested in featuring. I'm interested in featuring all of our members, but I know you guys in particular are really, have really interesting stories and lots to tell. So I might be tapping on you to grab a photo and a brand statement from you so I can brag about you on our social media accounts, leading up to our next launch. We're opening Working with Dog up again, the second week of July. And as part of that, we're jumping on the, Pet Professionals Week bandwagon, and we want to show you off as a part of that. So expect to hear from me, in order to get that info from you so we can show you off. So look for a good photo you're going to give me, or a couple of photos that you can give me to put you out on our Instagram and Facebook page. Okay, that's it. Love you. Thanks for being here. I'll see you soon. Bye.